welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast. This is RPG Site's weekly podcast where we get the site staff together to talk about our favorite genre of video games. We have the full crew here today. I'm your host. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, Josh Torres.
Merry post-Thanksgiving, happy pre-Christmas.
Mm-hmm. We have Mikhail Madnani.
I'm thankful 100 Lion exists.
Adam Vitale.
Hello.
James Galizio.
I'm thankful I'm almost done unpacking boxes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear more about that in a minute. And then also Chaman Wu.
Not the osmanthus soup.
Yeah, so we are recording this, the weekend after United States Thanksgiving. I think we've regularly held this podcast, though we don't usually have every participant here. I'm not actually sure, but we're recording this. I think a lot of us have had opportunities to be with family, whether you're participating in the podcast or listening to it, and you're from the States. I know Chow, being Canadian, has probably celebrated Thanksgiving a month ago, or other people who are not either might not have an analog. But yeah, I guess we'll just probably start out with, this is going to be a pretty casual episode of the podcast. Not a lot of news. And of course, for this weekend, I don't think we normally expect that. Though there is some. We're just kind of, the Indie Game Live Expo, I think, is going on right now. We're just wrapped up. We have a few small headlines from there, a few dates as we get into December. So not nothing, but pretty quiet. So this is going to be a pretty chill, casual thing. Just us kind of wrapping up, getting ready for the Game of the Year stuff. And we'll have some details on that also as we go through the podcast. But yeah, I'll start out with James. For anyone who's following him on social media, you are in the middle or at the very tail end of a move. That was how you spent your Thanksgiving in some ways.
Yeah, well, I did actually do Thanksgiving with my parents, so I did at least that. But yeah, last week or so, I've been in the middle of a move, which is always a fun time, I assure you. But
Finding a new apartment to move at California, always a fun process, they say.
So I found out the main reason why this apartment complex was had a bunch of units that they were filling is apparently there's a new law that goes into effect December 1st, where if you're renting out an apartment, you have to supply a fridge. So they were trying to get all the units filled before December 1st so they didn't have to buy fridges for every single unit.
What? That's insane. Okay. Yeah. Oh, do you have a fridge at least?
Yes. Did your unit come with a fridge? Okay.
Okay, good.
Josh, how was your Thanksgiving?
Mine have kind of, it was in a weird spot because it was going to be a low key Thanksgiving this year. I was originally just going to spend it with my mom, but she's a flight attendant. She's out at work right now, and she was originally supposed to come, home at Thanksgiving. But flight delays, flight schedules being what they are, we've had to kind of push it back again and again due to, her schedule. So, as of the moment, it's going to be a late Thanksgiving with her tomorrow. It's primarily going to be a lot of Filipino food. So mine was sort of a chill, low-key solo Thanksgiving of I just went to a local diner and had their Thanksgiving dinner. And I just had
sometimes that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. So hopefully, God willing, she'll be make it home tomorrow and we'll be able to spend Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so I spent Thanksgiving with my girlfriend and her parents. And we also had another friend over. Relatively traditional, except, I kind of take that back. They don't like turkey, so we had ham, but my girlfriend can't eat ham. So what we did, we're in New Mexico. So there's a traditional Southwest. I don't know if it's based out of New Mexico or out of actual Mexico, but there's a dish that is pretty common here called pozole, which is a green chili pork stew. Oh, and I'm not from the area, so I can't really speak to it as an authority. And we did it with chicken instead of pork so that everyone could have some. And it was really good. And I'm going to actually make it a compliment to Thanksgivings going forward. And other than that, we did the traditional green bean casserole, potatoes, all that sorts of stuff, cranberry. And I'm a fan of both it's almost a meme at this point, but I'm a fan both of the made from scratch, minty orange cranberry like sauce versus from a can shaped like a can. Like both are good. I do not have a preference. I will have a serving of both. We didn't have either, but just putting it on the out there for the record. But cool. It was a good time. I know Adam worked on Thanksgiving, but he got a free meal out of it. So,
yep,
good job.
Was the meal good?
It was pretty good for being free. You know, it's funny. I work at I work in basically a lab in the semiconductor industry, and everyone has a salary and gets paid. But you can't. It's hard to understate the appeal of just having free food for anyone.
Yes,
it's just a good bonus to get, especially when working on a holiday.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of that will try to lean this towards more towards like the gaming side of things, but there really isn't a ton this week, so that's why I'm okay to just kind of chewing the fat here. Though I guess just for some programming notes kind of here up front, just so people listening to the podcast, if they're wondering, because we haven't detailed this out quite yet, we are recording this obviously in the last weekend in November. We are also going to have a regular episode of the podcast next week, first weekend in December. The topic of that podcast, I believe, will be almost certainly Octopath Traveler Zero as one of the big December releases that are coming out. So we'll be talking about that next week. And then that will be the last regular episode for 2025. After that point, we are going to be recording the Game of the Year cast, which we've done pretty regularly for the last several years. So that'll be recorded mid-December, but we probably won't publish it until later in the month. So that's not going to necessarily, normally we try to get our podcast published within a day or at least 2 days of when we record them. Though the Game of the Year cast requires a little bit more editing. We time it up with some features on the site. So that will come out later in the month around, the December 25 holiday or so. It kind of depends on how long it takes to put together, but we're going to be recording it in 2 weeks. So well, just wanted to let you know all that. I think I got all the details there. This week, next week, we'll release regular episodes. Then halfway through the month, we'll release our Game of the Year episode. And then we'll reconvene in January. It'll probably be January. I'm looking at my calendar here. Like the first weekend, like the third and fourth. But it kind of depends. We'll know for sure once we record the Game of the Year podcast and we know what everyone's travel plans are. So I think that's it for programming notes. I'm looking here at what we've been playing this week. I know a lot of people here. I talked last week about Outer Worlds. I've been finishing that up. I played the DLC of Kingdom Come Deliverance. I know other people have been playing other games. We're going to be talking about all this podcast. So we can all, speak to the different games available at the Game of the Year cast. The first thing that I do have listed here is a game we talked about because we had a review up on the site, but we didn't have anyone on the podcast that was able to speak to it, having played it directly. And that is Demon School, which, Josh, now you've put at least a handful of hours into. So we're going to start there just because we haven't really gotten it as a hands-on look-in yet on the podcast. And then we'll kind of go from there with what other people have been playing before we go into like a limited news slate this week.
Yeah, Demon's School has been a title I've had my eye on for quite a while now, and I know several people did. It's that a game developed by Necrosoft Games, published by, I don't know how you pronounce this, Eastbird? I don't know. I forget how they pronounce the publisher's name.
I can see it. I can see it spelling in my head, but I don't know how it's pronounced.
It's like YSPRYD Games. I don't know how to pronounce that. But it's a pretty interesting title. When people saw it in trailers throughout the years and the developers spoke out, obviously they've spoken about their inspiration by Italian horror in terms of like designing its aesthetic, and it's very striking. And when people saw the gameplay, it's like an isometric tile-based strategy RPG, even though it doesn't really play like a traditional one, and I'll go into that. But people saw, hey, that kind of looks like the first Persona game, and battles were shown there. They were an isometric view, and each character had like proper proportion pixels when they were on that battle screen. So it's very reminiscent of that. And the story premise is your main character Faye and her soon to be best bud Namako. As like they start the game on a boat heading to this island, where they'll attend school. I'm not exactly sure, like, the whole reason why they go there, or why like, it's almost like an exile sort of situation. But anyway, like, it seems like shady shit is going up in this island. There are demons corrupting students. There are gangsters roaming around. They're, as far as I know, like, the main baddies so far. And then there's different types of demons you encounter along the way. Like, some demons will have, like, AoE attacks. Some will, like, explode on death and will hit, you know, demons around them and what. But the basic premise is, like, hey, you're stuck on this island. There's no way to get off. And there's you know, there's a school. There's certain facilities. There's a town, a lighthouse. There's, like, stuff to go to. You don't go there, like in an open world or anything. It's everything is, like, a zone base. You go to, like, a map menu, and you can, like, instantly go to, like, any point on this map facilities and so forth. And when you're going to them, like, so far, out of combat stuff is fairly basic in terms of, like, hey, here you can, there are events that you can interact with at, like, say, like, this town plaza where you can put a coin, throw a coin into a fountain, and most of the time it'll do nothing, but sometimes it'll reward you with, like, the opal money currency, or you'll learn an ability from it. I don't know exactly how RNG or random that is, or if that's, like, you get awarded, you know, one of these things after you keep on doing this mini event. Sometimes it's, like, a side quest of, like, hey, you interact with this person, there's a battle that occurs, and maybe you'll get, like, a new ability to learn out of it. So, and then one that I recently unlocked is, like, you unlock fishing, and fishing will have like a whole fish catalog with, like, really gnarly looking fish, demon fish, about it. But it's all relatively basic, and it's fine, you know, it's functional. But, like, in terms of, like, you know, Faye, Namako, and then your soon to be other party members, Destin and Newt, I don't know if the story will get better, or, like, if I'll start, like, kind of caring about these characters and what they're going through, because right now it's still fairly early. I don't really care about the story yet. So far, the story so far has been, like, when you first attend school, your first assignment concerning Faye and Namako is finding this cursed VHS tape. And then you learn this cursed VHS tape is, like, at this abandoned building that's always being guarded by guards. So you have to kind of go out of your way to, like, formulate a plan of, like, how do we get, like, the pass to, you know, go into that school building. And it's all like setting up for, like, that arc to get inside the school building. You go in there, you fight, like, the first boss. It's, like, this all unfolds with, like, the first, like, 45 to 50 minutes ish. And that first boss is, like, a stack of, like, TVs, and that you are able to complete the assignment. And I just don't really have a great understanding of, like, what this is all building towards. But it's a fun story bit that, like, your protagonist, Faye, is, like, from a line of, like, demon hunters. And, like, of course, normal people are, like, think she's crazy. But as more supernatural things are happening, they're willing to believe her more, because she at least has the knowledge and know-how of how to deal with these supernatural things happening. And she actually, like, received training from her family to deal with them, because she's from a line of demon hunters. So, like, that's cool, you know? But I think
I just want to say, as you describe this, it's hard for my mind's eye not to, like when you're describing it and I'm painting the picture in my head, not to, like, put in, like, the K-pop demon hunter is, like, oh yeah, like a demon hunter, like she's trained for this. They're gonna secure the Hanmoon or whatever.
even though I'm not driving with the story yet, maybe it does, like, I'll start caring about it more. I intend to, like, you know, go through this game as much as possible before Game of the Year cast and so forth. I think the overall presentation, there's a, like, aesthetic, visuals, and music, like, it's a really, like, great atmosphere that it paints. Especially the music is very, it has a very, like, pop aesthetic to the music that really makes it feel come alive. It's very, oddly enough, it's very sort of reminiscent of the first Persona's PSP remake, not in terms of like employing vocals, but in terms of like just kind of the upbeatness of it, which is more suited for this game, more so than like the first Persona's PSP remake, which they tried to style in the more Persona 3 catering to that crowd. So I really do like kind of the more the energetic yet somewhat like eeriness to Demon School's music direction. I think the strength of this game is definitely the battle system, because even though it looks like a strategy RPG on the surface, and this is something that will may or may not like jive with people, but this is more so a puzzle RPG, more so than like your typical strategy RPG where you're more freeform in your tactics and like with stats and equipment and like gaining a statistical advantage, or like employing a more freeform strategy or tactical formation to overcome like odds. This one is more so when battles start and you can employ up to four party members in battle, there will be a certain formation of enemies in front of you, and your main goal is to defeat not all the enemies, but there will be like on the top left corner, your objectives are like you have to meet this minimum thresholds of enemies defeated. So you have to defeat like say 12 enemies this battle, and you have to do it within three turns if you want like the best grade or rank on it. I think you can. I haven't really like got. I've been aiming for like the perfect grade so far on those, so I don't know what happens if like you miss those targets or if you like just get graded lower. But after you meet that minimum threshold of enemies defeated, you'll want to at least have one of your characters at the very far end of like the battlefield in one of those tiles to start sealing. And after you end that turn, you'll automatically win the battle, and the ceiling will cause a portal to appear and like suck up all the remaining enemies on the field. So your main goal is finding a way to kill this many enemies and this many turns, and also having a character at least on the final turn be at that tile, ceiling tile, to wrap up the battle, because your allies can't just be all willy-nilly positioned at the end of it. At least one has to be at the end of that battlefield to seal all the demons within that time frame, turn limit. And it's cool that every one of your characters, because there's more so as puzzle, like puzzle battles, every one of them is very distinct and very they're very different from one another in terms of like their rules, what they want to do in combat. Like, for example, Namako and Newt, they don't directly damage enemies when you move them towards enemies. And Namako, for example, if she's by an enemy, she'll kind of drag them behind her, and it'll inflict a stun and defense down. So that means when the enemy gets a turn, they're unable to act for that enemy round, and their defense will be down for that turn. So any incoming damage they take will be heightened or increased during that round. Meanwhile, Newt cannot damage enemies, even like when he's by an opponent. He's more so a healer. So obviously, if you aim his quote-unquote attack towards an ally, it'll heal their health, but if they're already full health, it'll give them a damage buff instead for that round. And meanwhile, Faye and Destin are more of like your DPS people, where they do damage when they're by an opponent and they hit them. Faye has knockback properties. Meanwhile, Destin has like bonuses to like hitting enemies into one another. And it is a weird system to sort of get used to, because the way that you move in this game, and this has been covered like in previews as well, is unconventional in the sense that like when you're moving forward, for example, with an opponent or with an ally, it doesn't just move them over to the, like the next tile in front of them. It moves them like almost in a line, so they have like a maximum distance they can cover. So, like for example, Namako can travel 3 spaces. I think it's like 3 to 4 tiles in front of her at any given time. She cannot travel in that line for only just that tile. It has to be like within 3 to 4 tiles at a time. And you can move diagonally as well. So it's not only just a straight line. You can move northwest and northeast, southwest, southeast, south within that line. If you want to change the trajectory of which line you want to travel across, you can spend an action point to move to the left or right one tile and then move in that line trajectory with the single sidestep that you did. So it's very much a game that you have to think about trajectory when it comes to positioning, not necessarily like exact tiles you want to be on, but the trajectory of what you want to move across, because moving in multiple lines gives you options. Like for example, let's say there are 2 enemies that are at the 3rd and 4th tile in front of Namako. If Namako moves in forward, she actually has the capacity to like move like 5 tiles at a time, because she can only land on tiles that are like behind opponents if they're in her way. So she doesn't just like move her 3 tiles at a time in that instance, because she's bypassing multiple enemies. She's able to travel further because she's moving a line of enemies behind her. So that means you can like inflict that stunned and defense decrease on multiple enemies at once, because she traveled that distance and bypassed those enemies at once. And that can get even crazier when you're comboing with another character. Let's say Namako is now behind these 2 opponents that she bypassed. If you move Faye over and attack forward and hit both of those enemies, because those enemies are positioned between Faye and Namako, they do a combo attack and it'll do even further damage that stacks on top of like the defense decrease that she inflicted on them. So that's when you start to experiment of like how you get the most out of like your AP action points for your characters, and how you optimize that action point pool to defeat as many enemies as possible in a single round. And because during this planning phase, you're planning all the moves, and then once you're done, you'll see them all like happen in real time of like what you decided to plan. Much like how like Into the Breach handles its phases of during its combat. So it's really cool, because like the action point economy is versatile in the sense that like when you first initiate an action with a character, it'll take one action point on them. You can have them act again, but it'll take 2 action points this time. And then if you have them act again, it'll take 3 action points. But if you were to like have them act twice, so you do 1 action point, then 2 action points with them, they spend 3. If you go to another character, since they haven't acted yet, it'll only consume 1 action point. So those action point rules are applicable to each character. So you start thinking about like, how do I divvy up my action point economy this turn, so I'm getting the most efficiency out of my characters this round. And that's where it becomes really interesting, because you're starting to think about like where people should move, and do I have enough action points for this? There'll be certain modifiers to the action points when character specials come into play. So after you defeat like a certain amount of enemies on them, they're charging up the special bar, and a lot of them usually interact with the action point economy in some way. So for example, if Faye activates her special and she defeats an enemy with that special, it will not consume any action points for her. Nabucco's action or Nabucco's special does like an AoE. So even though she normally doesn't attack enemies or deal damage to enemies with her attacks, with her special, she now deal damage, and it's like over a certain like an AoE tiles, like a 3x3 like area or spread. So now she becomes like an offensive character when her special is on deck and ready to use on that. So it's a lot of like interesting playing around with how you efficiently deploy your characters and getting the most out of like the roles that they've been assigned, and how you combo into each other, how and when will you use your specials, and trying to get the best grade as possible within these limits and rules of engagement that you're that you've been assigned to, especially when like different enemies, like that enemy that I mentioned earlier, where if you hit them once, they'll explode the next enemy round comes around. So like a very basic strategy would be like, hey, have Faye like hit that enemy to push them back, and now their explosion AoE is now hitting nearby enemies that it's been pushed back to. So you start thinking about like, okay, how do I, now that I know that this enemy has that property when you see them in the future, how do I have this enemy work to my advantage whenever I see them? That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But I was just curious, Mikhail had a comment earlier about Demon Skull. Like, so Mikhail, what was your comment before I go on to mine?
So I was curious about, Josh, what do you think about the sound effects and the character portrait shaking stuff which they've implemented to show when they're scared?
I immediately turned that off after the first cutscene, like the portrait shaking. That was annoying. Like the sound effect is like, whatever, it's fine. It's a very whenever a character has like a reaction to something, because there's no voices in the game. But so in order to show like a character surprised or shocked, or they have like some new info that is meant to surprise players, they do have like a shrieking like shoo-hoo sound, like very high pitched, fast. And normally, their character portrait would shake, but they employ this sound effect to showcase some kind of reaction so often that I agree with you, Mikhail. It does get annoying very fast. So you can turn that like portrait shaking off when they're interacting with like your characters in a scene, but like obviously you'll still hear the sound effect, and the sound effect doesn't really bother me that much. But I don't like that they employ that same sound effect so much, and I kind of wish they had more variations of that sound effect to encompass more like emotional range for like, hey, they should be like, the scared sound effect. This one should be like the surprise sound effect. This one should be like the aha sound effect. Like having multiple sound effects that have more distinct, that cover more distinct emotions and reactions, rather than like that. It feels like almost universal one that they use.
Yeah, it's really like they put so much effort into the aesthetic and like the music in general in the game, and suddenly you have this one sound which gets repeated so much, it's kind of cheap in the end. It cheapens the whole thing. And yeah, I think when they first sent out codes for the Steam version, you couldn't disable the portrait shake, and I literally got motion sickness and like,
yeah, I wouldn't be able to play the game, yeah, if they didn't disable that, because that immediately got old to me. I'm like, do this.
But yeah, like I was just curious what you thought, because every time I boot up the game, I just remember that it's like awful. Like everything else is so nice, I'm like, this is so bad.
I hear you. It really breaks my heart whenever I boot up a game and there's something about the game that makes me motion sick. And I recall two games where like I really wanted to like them, but I just got motion sick every time I played them. Those two games were The Unfinished Swan and the God of War reboot, where I still finished that game, but I can only play like maybe half an hour chunks, because the depth of field of that, or the point of POV of that game when it first released, like I couldn't take it. Like I, no matter what setting I tried to flip, I'm like, this is way too close to Kratos's back camp.
It's, you know, the funny thing about The Unfinished Swan is I couldn't do it as well on PS3, but when they ported it to iOS, I beat it there in one go. Like,
Oh, just, wow.
That was fine. They added, funny. Like, I think the
I never had an issue.
Sorry, go ahead.
I never had an issue with unfinished swung on PS4. I wonder if the PS4 version also was fixed or.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I remember this was on PS3 that I tried it on.
Yeah, the PS3 version was like, whatever. I couldn't deal with that. Because I think even Journey was short, so it didn't get me too bad. But some of those games had like these four slow camera things where you couldn't like tweak any of the options, like kind of like some Nintendo games now. But yeah, like I wish games just let you get free camera movement or like let you increase or decrease the speed on your own, because yeah. But yeah, like that's interesting. Like Unfinished One, I think you should give it a shot on its like newer releases or whatever. I think it should be fine now. But yeah, hopefully this Demon's School, they don't like give up on that, because the sounds, I just can't get over that.
I don't like really like that sound effect, because it's like if it was used sparingly, it'd be fine. But it's used so much, and I don't know if that's like really the right way. I prefer. But other than that, I think like the presentation itself is like, it's pretty stunning. It has, I like that it has like an identity of its own. It's very, it doesn't really mesh with other styles and the way that they craft the presentation. Like it definitely owns its identity. And there's like, when you look at it, it's like, oh yeah, that's Demon's.
You might have covered this early. Just, I don't know if I missed it. Do you have like a set roster of characters that you deploy only a certain number of them, or is it like a fixed party? You have them.
As far as I know, like I only have the first four party members that you can deploy them. I'm sure there will be more party members that join you, and then you can start mixing up like your character formations. But at this point, I only have like the first four in your party, and I'm sure as more playable characters become available, I'm sure you can start mixing and matching like your party formations in it. It seems open for that, and you know, like, and there's also like a light social link-esque element to it all, where you can like there'll be some activities and responses where you can level up a character's relationship points, and my understanding is there is like some romance roots in the game should people want to go down that route for some of them.
I don't really have any other comments on Demon's School, but it's cool just to finally get like an actual look in of the game onto the podcast, even if I know you're only a few hours in. Definitely seems like something I could easily see like playing on a Steam Deck over the holidays, just to kind of like poke at it between family like gatherings and things like that.
Yeah.
You also had another game that you've listed here that you've been playing that is not that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah. So partially thanks to James and other people, you know, that we're acquaintances with, I got informed by this recent release called Sectori. It's not an RPG. It's more of an arcade dual joystick shooter. Very, very, very similar to Geometry Wars, though there are more mechanics going on than like the purity of Geometry Wars. But James, I'll let you introduce this title, because you're the one who originally made me aware of it.
Yeah, so Sectori is a twin stick shooter in kind of like the vein of Geometry Wars from a developer who used to work at Housemark. And apparently this is a sequel to one of his like previous indie games. But it's funny how I found out about this at like around the same time everyone else did, because it released on Steam and I was just looking through like the new releases and I found this, and it's like, this looks neat. And I was like, yeah, I'll play it. And if I don't like it, I'll just refund it. And it's like, oh, this is dangerous. This is like a very good twin stick shooter. And a lot more people have been playing it and have been saying the same thing. It's like, if you liked Geometry Wars, this is either do or do not play this. Which type of person you are when I say that.
Yeah, so the developer's name is Kinmo Latinen. Sorry if I mispronounced it, but I'm just looking at the Steam page, and it's a Geometry Wars in the sense of like, yes, yeah, the very responsive dual joystick nature, and it's very polygonal in terms of like its presentation. Where it really diverges from Geometry Wars is that there's the stages transform over time. So when you're doing a new playthrough, there'll be occasionally like red hazard markers on the floor that dictate, hey, don't stand here because the stage is about to transform, and whatever this floor tile is, it's about to not exist in a little bit. It'll instantly kill you, and that'll be game over on that. So you have to be very, very about like how the stage transforms. And, you know, I can see where if you like the purity and simplicity of Geometry Wars, this might not be for you because there's a lot of systems going on, because there's a whole variable upgrade system in the way that like your ship handles in terms of like, hey, do you want more speed? Do you want more another life shield? Do you want more upgrades to your missiles or blasters? As you're defeating enemies and collecting their tokens that they drop, occasionally on the field, you'll see like this light blue pickup that you can collect. And at the top left corner, one of these things will be highlighted. So at first, when you first collect one of these, it'll be speed. You can choose to spend that and upgrade your speed, or you can hold off and say you collect two more of these light blue pickups, and now it'll be hovering over Strike. And Strike is a maneuver where you can actually like it's like a dash that you can like ram into enemies, and like you'll do like a small AoE effect after you ram into them. So it's like kind of a risk and reward sort of thing, where it can also be used as like an evasive maneuver where if you're getting backed up against a wall, you can use this as a dash to get out of like a sticky situation safely and immediately change your positioning. So you can choose to like maybe spend it on Strike, so that'll be more that'll be better, it'll be more powerful, or you can choose to hold off on it and get maybe like one or two more of these power-ups and maybe get another life or upgrade it so you have like a missile pod following you and it start to spew out missiles. So there's a certain like Gradius-esque power-up system where you're collecting power-ups and you have the versatility and freedom to choose what you want to upgrade on the fly as this unfolding chaos is happening around you. And that there's also a sort of like very light like deck builder system to it as well, where there are certain events that happen when you're playing throughout stages where there are these gold things that show up. Sometimes it's like a gold line that shows a route of like gold enemies about to like following that route, and if you kill all those enemies, you'll see like this gold pickup, and then you'll have like a selection of like, hey, do you want to unfold this deck and show like its power-ups? For example, like there'll be like a drone deck, a deck that powers up your strike, and one that is primarily speed focused. So let's say I want to unfold the drone deck. I click on it and I'll say drone X. You'll have like additional two bomb drones with you. So I choose that. I get that power up. And next time like a gold event happens, like that shows this gold power up, I can have this evolution selection again. And I can choose to get more drones since I still have more drone power ups within that deck of cards. Or I can choose to unfold another one, like say a speed one, and I can start like investing in like speed power-ups in there as well. So there are like gameplay modifiers that further your capabilities. Go on.
There's also another wrinkle to it where those cards have a chance of being like a rare version of those cards, which like basically doubles the effect. So even if it's not something that you would have necessarily wanted right away, if it's like a rare variant, it's like, you almost always want to go for that because it's like, well, that's going to be like double, just like twice as impactful. So maybe go with that one for now and see what else I get later. Yeah. One of my favorite cards to get, especially if I get it early on, is the one that makes it so that the collection range for the Glimmer is a lot higher.
Oh, yeah.
That makes it a lot easier to get those selector tokens, well, spawn them, I should say, which makes it easier to just keep going because, like, not only are the selector tokens used to give you like an up, like a level to your like Gradius style like upgrade that you can spend, but also if you dash into them, they cause an whenever you pick one up, they cause an explosion. But if you dash into one, that like increases your I forget the name, strike, your strike combo. And if you keep that going, that increases your score. And some of those cards also can be, depending on what you set in your deck, is spend a certain amount of points to get an extra shield or an extra two shields and stuff like that.
Yeah, so even like score could be like a currency to like get some of those in like some deck selections, which is pretty cool to like gamify your like the score part of the game too. So yeah, and there's also boss battles as well. That after you complete a certain amount of stages, there'll be a big boss battle that has like its own mechanics, stuff like that.
And the bosses are randomized, but like depending on when you reach them in a run, they can be different power levels, which are like can be pretty drastically different in how you approach them.
Yeah.
Except absolutely. For like the worm one where it's just like, oops, all mines. Nothing else different. bunch of more mines.
It also starts spawning worm adds too. At like the higher levels of it, which are really annoying. The worm enemies are not my favorite in that game for sure. Yeah. And as you're playing through the game, you also like different modes that you unlock. Like there's like one game mode that I like where you can't fire or strike, but in order to do damage, there'll be like gateways that you have to like pass through, and when you pass through them, they'll cause an explosion. So like instead you're relying on like speed as like your primary way to survive, because the only way you can do damage is to pass through these gates. So there's like fun, like a selection of fun game modes that like really alter the style of like how you play through that game. It's very fun, very loud, very energetic. You know, you just get into the zone very easily with that game. You just lock the fuck in, and it's a very cool experience. I kind of wish they did have a demo for this game, in the sense that people don't know if like the visual effects of it will, if they'll have a bad reaction to it or not. Because I know it's definitely a game that like when you see it played out, when you watch it and not play it, you can feel that it's overwhelming, and you don't know if you'll have a great reaction to it when you play it yourself. Like I just know it's like it's a game that's better played than watched, because when you watch it and not actually play it, I know it looks very visually chaotic and overwhelming, and I sort of wish there was like sort of like a free way for people to just try it out for themselves briefly.
I would also say that I wouldn't necessarily recommend this game if you don't have like a high refresh rate monitor, precisely because of like the visual noise. I feel like it would be especially bad at like 60 FPS.
Yeah, I've only played at 144, so that's a good point as well. Especially when you collect like the letters, whether it's like Sectoria or Mirage. Once you collect all those letters, that's true. Yeah, you'll get into like this really crazy power up state briefly, and like the effects start going out of control. Like it's all rainbow colored.
It also makes it really hard to see when the stage transitions are. You have to pay super close attention because it's like based off the pattern, not the color. Because everything on the floor is red when you're in that mode.
I've definitely died like that because I couldn't see shit. There's a lot of visual noise in this game. But yeah, but it's a very, very fun game. And like you mentioned, if you are someone that historically has enjoyed not only Geometry Wars, but even like older Housemarque titles like Super Stardust HD, like this might be like your jam. Like I love Super Stardust HD. And when, once I learned that like, hey, this is from ex-Housemarque developer, I'm like, oh, this makes really a lot of sense why I love this game. This makes a lot of sense why I love this game.
Yeah, and shout out to Housemarque. They like even like on their Twitter apparently shouted out the release, because they're like, hey, one of our alumni just released a new game, and it's like that's cool.
Yeah, that's, you know, Housemarque, you know, they've had ups and downs, but I'm glad they're
I'm super excited for Saros next year.
Yeah, I love Returnal, and that looks to be more of that.
I hope it's day one PC. I know it won't be, but it's like I can hope. I can play it on PS5 if I have to, but it's like
I know. But hey, the upside of the PS5 release is still you have the triggers on the dual. I know the PC version of Returnal supported that too. But it's always
actually do it as well. Oh. They still don't implement that exactly as well for some reason. It's like limited. I don't get why. Like when I tried Spider-Man,
Plugged in, like disable Steam input?
I did all that. It's there. But it's not exactly the same as it is on PS5 for some reason. So you'll get adaptive trigger, you'll get haptics, but it's not exactly the same. Like I literally compared Spider-Man Remastered on both like side by side, and I was like, what is going on over here? And I found out it's just apparently how they've implemented it. And it's only their games that do it exactly the same, but for some reason their thing is just, at least in the Spider-Man games and Returnal, it wasn't the same. So I don't know if they fixed it like in newer games or whatever, but yeah, that's just one weird thing.
But yeah, it's ever Sectoria. It's fucking cool. It's I've become a little bit addicted to it. Whenever I see the icon, I'm like, maybe just one run. Just one run.
And Mikhail, you also listed a couple games. I know we're kind of just rapid firing through these, but that's just kind of the podcast we have set up for this week. You had at least one game that you had returned to in preparation for Game of the Year. We talked about it a lot, like when it released, but not in the last like 4 or 5 months. You've gone back to 100 Line.
Yeah, so let's go back to when 100 Line review code was sent out. So at that time, it was around the time Expedition 33 was coming out, if I remember correctly. And back then, I believe I decided to play Expedition 33 like all the way before doing 100 Line because it felt like Expedition 33 would get spoiled on social media much quicker. And I was right about that. So I ended up putting 100 Line on pause because I just played it for testing essentially. And I rushed through a lot of it, like skipped scenes and stuff. I just thought I'd get back to it eventually. But then like in the last few months, I was like, okay, Game of the Year is coming soon. When am I going to make time for all this stuff? And then Inazuma 11 happened as well. Like, as you know, like Josh has been talking about it. I've been playing it here and there. And then I was like, okay, I need to finish Inazuma and I need to finish 100 Line for Game of the Year. How am I going to do that? So I was like, I have to pick one of them and start soon. But what's been happening with Inazuma, which we'll probably cover in the news section, is it's been getting so many updates like every few days, which have like important fixes and like quality of life stuff that I just said, you know, it feels like I should wait a bit on that so that when they stop doing their updates for the holidays or whatever, I'll get back to it. And until then, let me like start 100 Line again. So I literally started a new save file on Tuesday evening or Tuesday night, I think. And we're recording this on Saturday morning, US time. I've played like 48 hours of it since. So yeah, it's... I finished the... Sorry, what?
Where are you? I was going to ask, where are you at in it now?
So I've finished the prologue and I am properly into the game right now. And it's like, firstly, I'm not going to talk about story spoilers or anything, but the first thing I want to note is that I'm so happy I'm playing it now with the quality of life fixes where you can like speed up stuff, skip stuff. You have like, you know, in like, what's the thing? They put like an indication of where the character is in the hall, left or right, so you know where they are. It just saves so much time compared to how it was at launch. So I'm very happy about that. And also, apparently you couldn't skip a lot of battles when you're like doing different routes before, and they've enabled that also in patches. So this is like one of those things where, you know, like Brian mentioned playing Kingdom Come Deliverance DLC now. I was just thinking of like how much of a better experience someone would get with like even Kingdom Come if they not only like played it now, but if they bought it now, you'd be able to get the game with all DLC for less than what most people paid for just the game at launch. And it's like this year. So yeah, it's one of those like Josh's philosophy.
It's a double-edged sword for sure, because, you know, when you introduce quote-unquote quality of life that skips things in the game, like it feels like almost an admission that like, oh, we screwed up, it wasn't supposed to be, we're introducing features for you to play the game less in a sense. And definitely like for 100 Line, there's definitely a certain route in the game where there's a lot of battles in that route that's supposed to inflict like, you know, this sort of despair and agony on your characters, but then you start introducing like quality of quote-unquote quality of life features that skips those. That yes, it is technically a better experience to play through because you're cutting out the mundaneness of it, but you do, I'm sure I said this in a previous podcast, where just like you're almost betraying the intent of like what you're trying to present, and that
no, you definitely always, did,
yeah, that's because always like a very finicky ground.
Even the greeting in the morning and the night, where I remember you said that like you shouldn't skip it, like real ones played through it without skipping and stuff. And like what I do is like I don't skip all of them. I skip some of them, so I like having the option basically. And like what I also did is on Tuesday, I re-downloaded the game on PC and I re-downloaded it on Switch too. I can't deal with the Switch version of this. Like, it has loading screens for like everything. It's just not happening with me. And yeah, like I just gave up on that and I downloaded it on my Steam Deck and I've been like playing it more or less every waking minute, taking a break from that to like post some news here and there. And that's basically been my Thanksgiving break, if you may. So yeah, I am enjoying it a lot. There's one thing in the prologue that really annoyed me towards the end. There's this stealth section which feels pretty tacked on. I don't know if it happens in multiple other routes, but in that one section it just annoyed me that it was there. Thankfully it was easy to get around. But the one takeaway I have from nearly 50 hours on a new save file is I'm very impressed with the strategy RPG section of it. I thought that would just be there for being the game, but it's pretty good. So enjoying that. Not like I've even been doing the training section, so like not grind, just because I'm enjoying the combat and all. So yeah, enjoying that quite a bit. And I hope to like finish 2-3 main endings. Like I have a list of endings I've been discussing with a friend of mine who 100%ed it, and she's told me which she recommends, and I've told her two which I want to do based on some things I've heard. So I hope to finish those off and then hopefully like tackle Inazuma before Game of the Year, and maybe Kingdom Come too. But yeah, that's good basically luck. What I've been doing.
Do that in 2 weeks, easy.
But yeah, like I'm very happy I got the game's limited edition. Like it's just enjoying the game so much, and I genuinely don't think we'll ever see anything like this. And I'd say I'm maybe 1/4 into it, like in the number of hours which I'm supposed to get out of it. So I want to see what happens with the other routes and stuff. And yeah, I think I definitely am happy I played Clair Obscur first, just because people were just spoiling that shit like all over the place. 100 Line thankfully has been and 100 Line thankfully, like the people have not been posting stuff, and I've managed to like so far not been spoiled on anything. So definitely happy about that. Yeah.
It's also good that you're getting through it now before the inevitable, well, feels like inevitable Ryukishi route, like going by the stuff that people have been...
I saw your post about that. That actually, when you posted that, I was like, you know, should I finish Silent Hill F as well? And I'm like, nope, first the big two, Inazuma and 100 Line, then everything else. Then Kingdom Come, and then everything else, which is...
I do need to play Kingdom Come 1 and 2, but I don't have the time before the Game of the Year podcast, and it's so frustrating.
Come on, $300.
Brian, you know why I don't have the time. You know why.
I just would not play Kingdom Come 1 right now. I would just skip it. Like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, but it's a direct Kingdom sequel.
It does not matter. Like, I just skip it and play 2 is how I would say it. Like, watch a summary. They even put up a summary video for this.
Then I'll do that.
Yeah. But yeah, like 100 Line, very happy with it. Like, just one question, like, for everyone who's finished the prologue, like that final boss theme, like,
it's racist. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. After I heard that, I was like, what the fuck just happened over there?
It's so funny. Like, even now you see people trying to upload full like soundtrack rips of the game, not realizing that one song is licensed and getting their YouTube channel hit.
Yeah, so now you have all these uploads on YouTube that say this is not the 100 Line invasion. This is not the 100 Line elite enemy theme and stuff like that. But yeah, like I realized that there's no soundtrack release yet or even a hint of it besides that 10 or 12 track thing they sell on Steam. So I'm listening to it through the game's gallery for now. So yeah, I hope they release one whenever they do more stuff with the game. But yeah, just very happy I'm finally getting to it. And after seeing all the Danganronpa 2 stuff, I actually re-downloaded the Danganronpa games. Maybe I'll talk about that next week. But yeah, enjoying 100 Line a lot. Hopefully I've finished like maybe 2 proper endings by the time, like by next week's episode. So yeah, that's my plan for this week.
We'll actually talk about Danganronpa a little bit in the news section here. Just a quick look in.
Yeah.
And interesting to hear you talk about like what you're preparing for Game of the Year, because my two big gaps for Game of the Year are going to be in Inazuma and 100 Line. Like both games that have been like received very well and have good word of mouth for from people that I kind of like trust. I don't want to say trust their opinion, because people don't try to deceive when they have an opinion, but people whose opinions that I know like are well substantiated, align with mine, can really like rationalize why they like or dislike something. So whenever those two games come up in Game of the Year, I'm going to be nodding along and say like, I believe everything you're saying, just haven't done it myself. And that's going to be, you know, that always happens every year in terms of trying to rank these things. It's more art than science. It's not an algorithm.
I am glad you played Fantasy Life though. Like, I think...
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I'm very happy that a lot of us played it. I unfortunately was not able to convince Adam to play it. Maybe this time, we'll see.
He was too busy playing, I don't know, something else.
Well, I guess we can't, I guess we can say we're playing it because the preview embargo just, like, obviously we have it. We've been playing Octopath Zero.
Yeah, and we kind of said we're able to talk about it next week, but that's also going to be a doozy for many reasons. But in terms of our coverage, just a reminder, that'll be a 2026 game in terms of coverage with our kind of relatively arbitrary but consistent December 1st cutoff for this sort of stuff. And then finally, before we get into like the rest of the news slate, Chow, you had played a couple games that aren't like not games that we typically cover on the site, but games that have been like released this year, at least this first one, Road to Empress. You said you played this with a friend. It's a visual novel of sorts, but I don't know much about it. So tell me about your time playing through Road to Empress and what it is and what you thought of it.
Okay, so Road to Empress, Josh actually played it and he talked about a podcast before. I'm not sure you were in that
episode. Must be blanking. Oh, I mean, I did miss a couple in the summer, so I'll use that excuse.
But it's been a while, so... So basically, you're playing as a consort that goes trying to win the emperor's favor so that you will become, you know, like a concubine, right? Obviously, when you end up in the emperor, in a kingdom, there's lots of schemers and you always get killed from doing any kind of choices and stuff like that. So that's kind of your general gist of it, right? It's like an interactive, like, you're basically watching a TV series, basically, except you can make the choices, right? I think as soon as the game starts, it sets the tone that you get killed for everything that you do, basically, right? I think Josh can probably already like recap over what happened before.
I've talked about it like on a previous podcast episode, but as you mentioned, like it's a like an interactive visual novel FMV game where you know most of your interactivity is you're watching these scenes unfold and you get usually a selection of like one out of like three selections, sometimes more, sometimes less. And you know, like that very first selection is like, hey, you're entering the palace and someone drops a comb by one of the, right by one of the higher ups. I forgot what they were called, like the women in power.
So basically is that dropped by your friend basically comes in and it's like, hey, we're best buddies, it's like, here's a hairpin from my aunt, it's like, and she tried to like put it on the main character, but the main character like accidentally dropped it because the consort of Wei came in and they just kind of panicked and dropped it, right? And so you have three choices right here, and most choices will lead to death. I'm sure everyone died in the first cutscene. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, 1,000,000% everyone died in that choice for sure.
So it really sets the tone. Like I basically showed my friend this, and then we're like, my friend's like, please play the whole thing, and that's how we end up playing this like entire Road to Empress game on stream, basically, right? Because he was just engaged from getting killed from the get-go, right?
I was the same way with my friends, too. Like, where we had, like, Road to Empress sessions when I was playing and they were watching and they were just so fucking engaged. Because I left most of the selections up to them. Like, what do you think we should do, you know, on that? And I'm just sort of, like, the person, on like, trolling it, like, the puppet for them. And they were so, like, you know, they even had, like, you know, they had, like, even, like, arguments of like what selection I should choose to start to rationalize, like you should choose this because of that and not what his selection is, because obviously this is the most rational choice, you won't die with this, of course we go with that selection and I die, you know, and they're like, what the f-?
You know? Sometimes the most obvious solution is not so obvious for some stupid reason. It's just like the horse one, it's like, Do you remember the horse?
Yes, like, I remember the horse.
It's like, there's a horse that you can't tame. It's like, what should we do? It's like, the first choice is like sing a song, right? So that sounds like different, right? And the third choice is like whip, hammer, and what was the third tool? I forgot. And they're like, so we try the singing. The horse goes berserk and you got trampled to death. I'm like, oh shit. It's like, okay, I guess we'll use the whip, hammer, and something. It was like, and the emperor's like, why do you want to pick these choices? It's like, oh, it's like, we'll just use like all these tools to like torture the horse so that it'll be scared because an animal that has fear can be tamed. I'm like, damn, what are these choices, man?
That happened to be the, like the right choice in that selection. You don't actually do it to the horse, but like the emperor's like, I like the cut of your jib with that rationale. You know, it's okay. I have a very important question for you, Chow.
Okay.
All right. Are you on Team Li Xi or Li Tai?
I'm technically on Li Xi, but my friend's on Li Tai. I always think races that gave me like max Li Xi affection, but I think Li Tai was won us over near the end. He was kind of like a dick at the beginning because you didn't even get killed for not agreeing to help him at the beginning, right? Because we actually went back saying, hey, it's like, will you help me? And you can refuse to help him. And then he just stabs you in the neck right afterwards, right? And so, like, okay, so that left a bad impression of him for us. It's like, we can't trust him. He's a schemer. But wait, Li Xi's a bigger schemer than him. He was actually the Galaxy Brain schemer in this game.
Yeah, he seems very innocent and everything with the baby face. So for people who don't, like, know, like, Li Xi and Li Tai are ostensibly like kind of like your almost love choices. Like they're these two princes who are, you know, sons of the emperor, and so they wield a lot of power, and so you your main character Wu Yuan Zhao collaborates with them a lot to kind of get through some of the like the bigger narrative arcs in the game, and you sort of have to rely on them because of their status in society and so forth, while you are still trying to rise through the ranks on them. So Li Tai is like more of the on the surface very much more the schemer, the cunning sort of person, has that very much the way that he presents himself and the way he goes through things, very much sort of that cunning sort of like dickish sort of prince, while Li Xi it like has like definitely seems more innocent, noble, but as you go through the game you'll see like, hey, this guy is he's definitely doing things that will benefit him in the end as well. And you're kind of, you are operating on multiple levels because you have to get sort of through these labyrinthian sorts of relationships of like, hey, can you really trust your aunt? Is your aunt actually like, you know, actually on your side? And that's a big thing that unfolds throughout the game. You befriend like the princess that is the daughter of the only
She's
daughter.
She's actually
of the
like
Emperor.
One of my favorite characters. She, I really bad for her. It's like, and their relationship becomes strained due to some incident that happens later on, which is kind of allude to like history, sort of like in real life. This is something that happened to her. She did not mourn for her father's death, and there was like two tomes that came out that details that she had an affair with monks, and the other books that doesn't, and no one knows which is the truth. But people say that because she didn't mourn for the king's passing, so they think that the monk story might be true. So that's kind of like how history goes, but.
I really like how they portrayed her story.
But after we finish the game, me and my friends still say the Chen Shin plot arc is still our favorite. The music video explaining how the Crown Prince threw all his title away to be with his lover who betrays him.
Oh yeah. So like the bard, right?
Yeah, the tragic, the tragic romance story that was our favorite story, actually.
Yeah, there's a tragic homosexual romance in this game that's like actually like fairly well done, and it's really kind of heart wrenching. You're like, fuck, man, that's crazy what happened.
So I'm looking at the game's Steam page, and it's really funny how right now the bundle with the bloopers is cheaper than just buying the regular game.
Yeah, that's how it was when I bought it as well.
Yeah. And like I said when I first mentioned this game, like, don't let the presentation of it like deceive you at first, because it because it's on mobile devices as well. So it looks like at first that like you're logging into like a gacha game, because you have to connect to a server and it is an always online game, and that's annoying. And like when you first boot it up into the main menu, you get like these something in the mail with like currency, and you're like, is there a fucking gacha game? But no, like this, like the only currency is in it is like boost popularity polls of like who you like and who you hate, and that's like it. Like the main meat of the game that you interact with is that branching story adventure in it. Unfortunately, because of like the way it's like structured and like the way it's presented and for mobile devices, like that's how they monetize the game outside of like the one-time purchase is through that. Which, you know,
it does look really like the price is really cheap considering it's like live action and shit. So
yeah, exactly. But it is definitely worth a play in my opinion. And I mentioned this when I first mentioned it on the podcast, but Chao, like, I was really impressed with just like the production values of this game, and like thinking about the logistics of like even having like at FMV like a whole town and all these like a shitload of people on set, like in for the production of this game. Like thinking about the logistics, like how much this must have like cost in terms of like just shooting it, and the amount of like variety in its like environmental sets and like the wardrobes in it. It's like it's all really, really well done. Crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely like a high production like TV drama. Like you wouldn't see TV dramas with this kind of production level, so it's pretty in the high end, right? Yeah. Obviously, like I would definitely seen higher shows, but like you know, for what this entails, like this is very high in the scope, right?
But I won't get into you know story spoilers here, but I just wanted to know like your reaction. You don't have to go into what happens, but your reaction like when it comes to the chapter about astronomy.
Oh, that one's kind of hilarious. I feel that one was kind of bullshit. It's like, what am I supposed to do here?
That's crazy.
I feel like my favorite one is when you find out that your aunt is not a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And she constantly, like, every time you fuck up the choices, she comes like, hey, sweetie, want to try out this sweet soup? And you just die.
Yeah, so one of the ongoing joke for people who play this game is like, do not trust Osmanthus soup, because one of the primary ways you die over and over again in this game is like you're served Osmanthus soup, and it's like, well, time to serve up, you know, that's how they kill you, is poisoning you with soup and so forth. So
my friend was like, okay, I went to order bubble tea. He's like, hey, they got Osmanthus flavor. Never mind. Okay,
next time. Yeah, that's right. It's time for some Osmanthus boba. Let's go.
So yeah, I think the old Memphis kind of stuck with us. I'm like, damn.
So were you? Well, I guess it's kind of weird now because you're not. It loses some of the surprise factor because at first, when this game first launched, for several months, it was just called Road to Empress, and then just very recently, they updated the name of the game on their Steam page to Road to Empress 1. Because when you reach the end of that game, you think, I won't say like how you think, like based on the name, you think that like, oh, this game will end when your main character becomes Emperor. And then it ends at a certain point in the game that it doesn't look like the finale. And then like after you get through that scene, it's like, hey, here's a trailer for the next part. You're like, what the fuck? What next part? You know? And then it reveals like, hey, there's actually a sequel coming like this upcoming February, like the next February. Supposedly,
I feel like if you know like history, I feel like there has to be a sequel because at, like halfway through the game, you're like, that doesn't tell like the whole story. So I felt like it wasn't too much of a surprise. I seen like something like that happen with a TV series. Have you ever heard of a Chinese opera? I mean, TV series called The Advisor's Alliance.
That sounds sort of familiar, but I don't think so, but the name.
Okay, so basically, that is it's about Sima Yi, in the Three Kingdoms era. So it's like his point of view. So mm-hmm. It doesn't like romanticize like, was it like the other two kingdoms? It's more on his point of view and why he joined like the
Wei Kingdom and the
yeah. And, so forth. And then it ends like in a halfway point. I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't cover his entire story. It's like it's only like. It's like before, you know, way before the Three Kingdoms ends, right? So yeah. It's like, okay, so it's like there has to be a sequel, and yeah, eventually they announce a sequel, and you're like, yeah, I'm not too surprised. And the sequel, it's like the other half where he's doing the campaigns against Sugi Lang, you know, stuff like that, right?
Oh yeah, Sugi Lang, yeah.
So yeah, it's like it's kind of like the same thing here. It's like you know that this girl is gonna become Wei Qizhen, and then you're like, okay, so there has to be that story arc about how she becomes that tyrant empress that she's known in real life, right? So. We just don't have that other half, so I feel like that's not too big of a surprise.
Yeah, yeah, so. I mean, it just caught me off guard because I don't know. I just thought there was going to be like, I mean, it's still a pretty like lengthy game for an FMV game. You're still getting like about 11 to 12 hours out of it.
Yeah, it's a big game for sure.
Yeah, and yeah I'm looking at the Steam reviews, and it seems like most of them are between like 8 and 12 hours. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So you're still getting a lot out of it. I'm very excited because like that. I won't say what the second, like the trailer for the second part has, but it seems to be a lot more action scenes and like just the choreography seems to go insane in that trailer. Like it seems very intense what's happening in the next part, which you know it makes sense because you're like the stakes are now higher, let's say, based on what happens.
I'll be there day one.
Yeah, me too. I'm there day one. I'm sold. Yeah, but this game to me. It's like it's definitely in my top 10 this year, like for sure. Not even a question.
I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, I got a TV that's coming because I got one on sale. Like there's like an eBay sale in combination with like the PayPal 20% back thing, and I got a LG C5 for like just about $600.
That's not bad.
Wow,
yeah, it's a 42-inch one, so I'm like gonna sell like. To my monitors and use that as like a both PC console thing and also like have it as be like the TV for the living room, so that'll work. And it feels nice. Like that would be the perfect way to play it is on that.
Oh, report back if you do. We need the road to Empress Nation to continually build and rise up, man. I can't I'm always enthusiastic to recommend this game because I know people will have a great time. With this game.
I'm gonna see if I can convince some friends of mine to like maybe come over and we'll do sessions.
Nice. That's such a fun way to do it. Yes. It's such a fun game to like just have spectators with and just like see it unfold together. You guys will go insane. It's gonna be awesome.
You know, one of the things that me and my friend discussed it was you know this game? I feel like our parents could play it who was tech illiterate. Or like, watching TV dramas.
If it was like, let's say, if it was like on Netflix or something, you only have to like control it via like a remote, like left and right or something. Yeah, they probably would fail
the QTE sections, but like everything else, it's like
yeah. If there's like an autocomplete like for them, like you know, if you fail it once, like maybe like a failsafe like that. Like I think it would definitely reach like an older crowd that would like really like this kind of a. Like almost TV drama, like you said, it's so entertaining. For me, like it's kind of like almost like the complete package. Like, hey, stellar like production values, stellar acting, stellar music. Like, I especially like the actor for the Emperor. I like for some reason there's something about the Emperor's actor that really makes him compelling to me. Like, I really like the way he does his. Expressions and body language. Yeah,
I think all the veteran actors are good, but I do feel like the Emperor is a clown story wise. We feel like every choice is that if you resort to asking the Emperor, you will die, and he never seems to listen to your reasoning. So we treat him as like, man, he's like the greatest Emperor of all time, but in this game, he's portrayed as a clown.
I love it. Okay, give me top three. Favorite characters.
Top three. Okay, I put the princess as number one. That's for me.
Okay. Okay.
Number two is probably. Do you know that Kakubin that gave you a share room with you at the beginning?
The one that you the hidden one or the one that's
The one that asked you to it's like she's like the empress. I mean, she's like the emperor's like favorite consort. Like,
okay, yeah.
She also like taught you to play like this this game. I don't know what the
exact. I forgot it's called. It's not backgammon, but it's like
You get what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, I think she's like my second favorite.
Okay,
because it's like yeah, there's actually like nice people in the palace that aren't all schemers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. that's the second one. And the third one, I would say it's probably Li Tai. I would say
okay.
kind of fell out of favor for me near the end. It's like, right. But Li Tai is like, man, this guy does have a hard goal. He's just super angry about it.
He's secretly the goat. okay, all right.
He's just super angry, okay.
Yeah, and the top three is really hard for me. Like, I really like your map. What's her name? Shishin, I believe. Like the bodyguard of the consort that you get to your side. You remember her? Yeah. I like her a lot. I like just the protagonist herself, just Fu Zhao. Like, I really think it's hard to strike a balance between like when you're the main almost quote unquote controllable playable character in an FMV game. Like, it's really hard to strike that balance of, like, believability and being, like, a puppet to the player. And she strikes a nice balance of, like, she definitely can carry her own weight and make it believable despite, like, the choices that you make for her. I think she's a really, really compelling character that will continue to evolve. And I think... For a third one, I think it might be the princess for me, too. It might be the princess. The princess is really
cool. I treat the protagonist as like a self insert in a way, but in a good way, like in a good way. So that's why I don't really like.
I also do like the emperor. He's like he's either like a close third or fourth for me. The emperor is he's too much for me.
Look. There's a voting poll. You can vote for the most dislike. I think everyone's most hated person is the Lucy, which is the one that like stabs you in the back right in the prologue. So everyone knows that she's evil.
Oh yeah,
right from the get-go. I think she's the most disliked. I think everyone hates her. I can't believe there is Lucy fans. So I don't like.
There's always fans for everything. Yeah. That's that's fun. I'm glad that you got to play through Road to Empress. Hope to see more people do it. It's a fun game to go through. There's another one here, Chow, that I'm personally really interested in. For I know they announced an English release in like a Famitsu interview, but this is Magical Girls Witch Trial. It's been on Steam for a few months, but only in Japanese. This is by developer Acacia and Re:Air. And this has been getting a lot of buzz in the amongst Japanese and Chinese players. This is like very, very, very highly rated on Steam and has sold extremely well, even in those territories. And apparently, they're gonna support more languages. In the future, probably next year. What do you think?
I always checked out the prologue because I'm just kind of like curious, like why is this game like getting like extremely over positive like ratings? I heard this game was out since July, so it's been out for quite a while, and there's quite a following, right? It was even like people were even trying to get nominated for like Games Awards and all this stuff, and I'm like, okay, I'm curious. Obviously, there's no translation, so I feel like this is like uphill battle trying to win. You know, like an American-based fan show, and there's
Maybe next year, you know, because once it's widely available, like in English, I'm sure there'll be a lot of buzz for it in the West once word of mouth gets around.
So I just checked it out for that reason. So my way of checking out is watching a VTuber playing it, like a VTuber.
Yeah. Well, which VTuber?
Let's see. I kind of forget her name, but she had like white. Okay, white hair is not.
the VTuber the white hair.
Just go back and see if I can find.
I go through his YouTube history. Like, which VTuber did I watch to play this game?
Hakase Fuyuki. So I was watching her. So it kind of helps because you know a lot of like you know like if you play like VNs like visual novels like certain dialogue are not voiced. You know like. You know, saying
you have to vote the VTuber, but usually voice them for you, like they'll read it out loud.
Yeah, that's why I watch them like a VTuber.
Okay. Makes sense,
kind of thing, right? So that's kind of like my experience, like a secondhand experience. Obviously, when the full game comes out, I'll buy it and you know see what the buzz is about.
No, yeah, I'm definitely there day one. It has my interest. So, what did you see and what do you think? Just you know, initially.
So basically, it starts off like okay. The second reason why I'm curious is the thumbnail for this. If you search for the opening thumbnail, it has the main character placed on a guillotine, and you're like, what did she do that there's a guillotine right in her head?
Very striking visual. Yeah.
So you're kind of curious on why. So the beginning of the game is kind of started like with this main character that's being ridiculed at school. She's being bullied like like typical like Japanese bullying where there's like chalkboard writing, die, 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 you know, like complete telling her like she's a piece of shit and you're like, what is going on here, right? So, and she's kind of like accepting this fate or don't know. And then she wakes up in a prison and she's like trying to recall how she got there. She can't seem to like know why she ended up in this prison. And then, they start hearing screaming of like random voices. So she knows that she's not the only person in this prison, right? Yeah. And then later on, she also encounters her childhood friend, who goes by the name of Nikado Hiro, and she's like very hostile towards her. And obviously, you don't know what strained their relationship. The main character doesn't like say what it is. It's like, hey, Hiro-chan, it's like a long time no see. And he's like, this girl's like, get the way away from me, bitch. You know, like I don't know what the main character did, right? And so you kind of like wonder, is there a reason why this main character is being bullied? Did she did something wrong? You don't kind of know, right? She seems kind of nice, but, you know, but obviously, you know, that could be just a facade, right? So,
okay.
And then afterwards, there's like a robot that comes in, like this owl-looking robot comes in. He's kind of like watching like Danganronpa
It's like the Monokuma equivalent.
Yeah, of it. He's like, and he has Frieza's voice. So if you Frieza's voice, voicing this evil robot, basically it tells him you have to come and meet us in this room. And it's like, you better not, like, you know, try to avoid my orders because we could just easily kill you regardless. So just come, right? And then it's like, okay. That doesn't seem so bad. Then they look out of the cell. There's like this, like a Grim Reaper looking witch robot looking thing. And they're like, shit, it's like, what the hell is this monster, right? So, okay, no problem. Okay, so they decide to meet in this room. And you see that all 13 other candidates are also here. So you get to meet like what the characters are. They're all like character archetypes, right? They'll be okay. like a noble Ojo-sama kind of.
Hell yeah.
There is that. There is like the very like knightly type girl that looks like a boy, you know, type like that.
And okay.
She has like an idol life and, you know, like, and they have like there's one like wearing like all goth, have a mask. It's I'll kill you, you know, like constant screaming, like violent quotes. Like they're all like character archetypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then who else is like that? I remember there's also like a detective that's like, that seems like a complete clown, like plot-wise. Like she seems so dumb. It's like I think like someone dies pretty fast in the story, and they're like, "Oh, yay! It's like a murder case."
Like they're excited that they're gonna investigate something.
Yeah, like
okay,
it's like she seems like a clown to me, right? Okay. So, anyways, you get to learn all these 13 candidates, and they all have like fit like a certain character archetype, and the robots. Like, his name is Gokucho or something like that. And he explains to you that the reason why you're all selected here is because you have the potential to be a witch. And witch are very deadly creatures, and they need to be exterminated to keep the world safe. It's like obviously, yeah. If nothing happens, it's like you're free to go. But you have a potential to be a witch, right? And I won't say who it is, but one of the person freaks out. And decided to attack the witch to prove that, you know, it's not a thing, right? And so they immediately cut her head off.
Oh, jeez, okay.
And they're like, it's like, okay. It's like, okay, she is not a witch. Because witch don't die so easily.
All right.
And so all the girls are, like, shocked because of it, right?
And how graphic is this beheading, like in terms of, like, how the presentation?
It's obviously, it's like a red screen with black silhouettes, so you just see like the head being. It's obviously like, you know, it's not like done, like Madoka in a way. You know, it's like, I feel like it's like watching Madoka. You know, when they go into those witch battles. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
It's like all silhouette. Like when they did that, I'm like, damn. And so all the girls are now terrified of what happened. So, you know, they kind of go back to their cell and. And the next couple days, it's like, I think this is where the gameplay starts. Mm-hmm. You basically go to rooms to talk to your friends and investigate and stuff. And then no matter what you do, a friend just, like one of the candidates just dies, and then you're kind of put on trial to prove you're innocent or whatever it is. And that's kind of like the gameplay loop, right? So it's very damper off a,
I've heard about a lot of similarities and to it being like Danganronpa, but
that's what I got from the prologue. So yeah, maybe I'm curious to check this out. I think the premise is interesting, you know.
Yeah, I believe it'll be coming to Switch in spring of next year, and I think a lot of people are guessing that might be when the Western release is gonna land. But who knows? They haven't announced anything officially outside of like Switch release in Japan next. So I'm curious to check it out. I'm very captivated by like just kind of the overall presentation, also what people have been saying about it. It definitely sounds up my alley.
Yeah, like probably not too spoiler territory. Like I like, so I mean, this is a heavy story game, so
yeah, for sure. Thank you for the insight. Thank you to the what was the VTuber that you mentioned, Hakase Fuyuki, for showing Chao this game.
I'm reading a lot of the overwhelmingly positive like response on Steam, and a lot of the comments like are in English. People are playing with, you know, fan subs, or maybe they're watching YouTubers, I don't know. So it has to a small extent broken out of just that, you know, to an English speaking audience. So I would not be surprised if once it supports the language officially, if it basically just
explodes, maybe. Yeah.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah.
That covers us for kind of a little smorgasbord of what we've been playing and a little bit of a wrap up as we go into December. As for news, like I actually didn't list anything here for like article shout outs or reviews. Obviously, we call like 6 to 10 articles out every week. So if you go to the RPG site tab and hit the articles tab, you'll see recent reviews, recent previews, like the Neo 3 preview that we put a focus on last episode. Recent reviews like Quartet, Dragon Quest 1 and 2, Demon School, all still up on the site, of course. Just no new ones in the last 7 days. Of course, it's a holiday week for many of us. In terms of news headlines, not a lot, though. During today, we have gotten a few headlines from the Indie Live Expo. So thank you to Josh for like linking some of these. They're not on rpgsite.net, so we're going to borrow from our friends at Gamatsu. They're always very timely and very thorough on all this coverage. So give them a shout out. We're a good friend of the site. Now, a few of these headlines here, some of them I know and I'm familiar with, and some of them I don't. Sacrifier, this is an indie RPG, very heavily based on like Star Ocean, has been in and out of the news ever since its announcement several years ago. It's had a couple of open play tests and things like that. It's going to get another one next January, and there's a new trailer showing that. So I know the last play test was kind of lukewarmly received for Sacrifier, so hopefully they were able to implement some of the feedback they got, and we'll see how that next play test comes in just a couple months.
I know this was also recently like delayed before this, like the sometime next year, so I just really wonder, I don't know, like holding another open play test for this title, it's like, they just seem, from my perspective, just, I don't know if they're really confident in like what they're making, if they have to continually make open play tests, and like, what if the, you know, let's say this open play test happens next January and people still aren't, you know, jiving with it, what then? Yeah. They're kind of in a tough situation where it kind of feels like they're not confident in what they're making.
And there's always like a balance. I'm not a game developer.
Yeah, of course.
But like, there's always a balance between like, and I'm thinking this more like any sort of creative process where feedback is useful, but it can't be the end all be all. Like, not everyone's going to be pleased at some point, whether you're writing a book or making a piece of art or designing a game or whatever. Like, we are going to make it like this. This is our rationale. And hopefully it finds an audience, but we're not going to just placate everyone. We will never know for sure, like what sort of feedback they're hoping to get. Cause you're never, the goal can't be, well, 100% of people who tried it liked it. So I just kind of hope they have their boundary conditions like well-defined in terms of what they're trying to hit and taking into scope the appropriate feedback to nail what their vision is.
For sure. Yeah.
A couple other headlines from Indie Live Expo. This is a game that I forget if we've covered it or not. It is a indie visual novel, I believe. Tsurugi Hime.
Yeah, Tsurugi Hime. It's a side-scrolling action RPG, and it was unveiled unveiled several years ago. It's from a new studio that was started up, or that part of the studio is by Yosuke Shiokawa, who was previously the creative producer on Fate Grand Order. He's that's why the I forgot the current Fate Grand Order producer's name, but that's why they call him like Tucson, because he's the second producer on that game that largely took over after the first arc of that game wrapped up. So like, you know, the Cosmos and the Lost Belt type stuff he's been in charge of. So this new developer, Fahrenheit 213, which Shiokawa was a part of, they announced Tsurugi Hime like almost 2 years ago now, it feels like. And they also have other big names on this project, like the character design is by Kuroboshi Kohaku, worked on Kino's Journey and SAO Gun Gale Online. So people who like those, like, they have a very distinctive art style on this project. So this game has been sort of on the down low in terms of, like, they've been working at it all this time, and they finally got a new trailer up that they shared at that Indie Live Expo. And it's still shaping up to be, like, looks fairly solid, but I think the thing that caught me off guard about this is there's some sort of, like, I don't know if it's like a roguelike stage progression, but there's definitely some sort of like deck aspect to it that the trailer alludes to. And even like the description of like describing this game is, I'm not exactly too clear like what this, what the progression of this game is, because my previous understanding is like it was a more straightforward stage based game that you go, that's like a linear story. But now there's like some sort of like 100-day countdown mechanic, and as you're going through stages, you're like leveling up like some sort of cards on this field that give you gameplay modifiers, it feels like. So I'm curious, but it's definitely morphed into a game I thought I knew and is maybe not. I'm not sure exactly sure. So we'll see. I'm still looking forward to it. It still has my interest, but it's way more different than I thought it'd be when I last saw it.
And it'll be launching in early access in 2026.
Yeah.
I don't think we have any other specifics of when next year, but at some point next year. And then this is the one I confused it with, so I fell a little red in the face.
Oh, before we get into that, I do also want to note that Tsurugi Hime is also composed by Takeharu Ishimoto. So if people who played World Ends of the U knows, that composer is on this project as well.
And then this debut trailer from Indie Live Expo from publisher G-Mode. This is the one that was the visual novel that I read about before the podcast. This is Heishin Shoujo no Araka Meikyu. This is a visual novel about like a secret maze and an all-girl band. And the interesting thing about this is it has a pretty thorough press release about the characters, about what they're accused of in terms of crimes. But the press release has like those spoiler bars, like redacted information in terms of like, you don't know all the details about the characters. We don't know what they've been accused of, or what happened or who's being blamed. And I don't know if that's going to be like the tie-in for the, just like the release of the game, or something they're going to like slowly reveal in the lead up to the release. Like even on the Steam page for this game, it's a lot of redacted information in the press release to try to kind of like tease that, as well as like you do get, you know, art profiles of all the characters and things like that. So debut trailer for this, no other details other than the trailer and the press release, but a cool looking project that's due out next year.
Yeah, on the Steam page, it does show that when it releases, it'll support English. As well, I think it's the first official confirmation that it will be coming in other languages besides Japanese. It'll also be in simplified Chinese and traditional Chinese. Developer Acacia is involved, which also was in part of the development of Magical Girl Witch Trials. So they seem to have a knack of like these sorts of almost surreal, energetic, aesthetic, but tragic all girls like stories. Like one of these characters, like the character descriptions for this game, like you said, are kind of something like Saiki Riru, for example. The press release description says, "I write a suicide note every day," and then she's like a bright, vivacious girl fascinated with suicide. And they have like hashtags that sort of describe their personality. So her hashtags are hashtag death wish, hashtag guitar, hashtag neon believer. And then the other character, like after her, is Ichinose Kairi, and then the she seems to be like a barter. She's like a self-declared strong woman who like likes to kick some ass. Even though she's petite, she lashes out at everyone with a ton of aggression. And her, even though she's frail and has a soft voice, and her hashtags are hashtag weakling, hashtag guitar, hashtag fuck, but the U with asterisk out. So there's definitely, they're already, before you even like know much about the game, even just through the text themselves, they're really trying to instill a lot of like in unique personalities for each of the main characters they're already divulging. It's fun. I think that's a fun way to sort of promote the game.
Make your game stand out a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And this was not from Indie Live Expo, but this was, it kind of falls into the same vein for a previously announced title that I kind of teed up earlier in the podcast. I'd forgotten that this was announced in September. Danganronpa 2x2. It's 2x2, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced 2x2. It's kind of like, it's Danganronpa Ultra Despair. Or I'm trying, what is the tagline again? Goodbye Despair. With like a revamped original scenario.
Two very different games. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I forgot. Yeah. Goodbye Despair, not Ultra Despair. It has a revamped original scenario plus a brand new scenario. We got an original like teaser for this back in September, but at the Danganronpa 15th anniversary like appreciation festival, of course they had a big like long stage show with, you know, the talent behind the game, and there was a little bit of a quick showcase of a few minutes of new gameplay. Now, for me, this is a little bit Greek because the showcase is in Japanese, and I don't have like the point of reference for the original because I haven't played it, but it does show like some of the new like characters and some teases for the new story route. And then also Mikhail and Kite have been pretty thoroughly covering some of the new voice actors that are going to be in Danganronpa 2x2, primarily because one of the original voice actors for Monomi passed away in 2023, so that character has been recast for 2x2. But
Mikhail, any insight on what they showed off?
Yeah. So the main takeaway from what little gameplay they showed is this is clearly not a game made for PSP anymore. Like, there's more real estate. You can actually see the character models or the portraits properly. Like, you know, I think they're also using live 2D instead of just having those static.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So it looks better. The UI, I'm not sure about the UI because they said this is like a special demo trial thing or something. I forget what the exact word is, and even though I wrote the post today, but forgive me, it was in the middle of a 100-line session. But yeah, it's it just looks a lot like there's more breathing space for the game. It looks nicer. I'm happy with what they've shown so far. I need to see, like, I need to play it to actually get a feel of whether it is snappier or whatever, because like after like a few days ago I started just re-downloading the Danganronpa 1, 2 and 3 on everything I have because I'm an idiot and I wanted to just see how they play right now to potentially do a feature. And like Danganronpa 2 on Switch and like Switch 1 version played on Switch 2, the cursor is so sluggish, it feels like I'm moving underwater compared to like how it is on my phone. So like these are the things I need to actually play to see how they've made it feel, because I hope it still feels like snappy like it does on every other platform and stuff like that. But I don't know. I might play this one in Japanese because I've only been playing the Danganronpa games in English so far. So I might give this a shot in Japanese. I don't know what they're doing about the English voices, whether like the whole cast is coming back or how they're handling it. Like, I don't even know if they're going to redo the whole original scenario, because this game includes the whole original and it includes a new story which has enough, like, as much volume as the original story is what they've been advertising. So I don't know if this is going to be one of those cases where they redo the whole voice acting for English and Japanese for the original route and the new one, or how they handle it. But I'm definitely going to play this because Danganronpa 2 is like in my top 10 games of all time. So I really want to know what they do with this, and hopefully the new, like, obviously they're trying to like tease people with 2x2. It could be Danganronpa 4 or something, like probably a wink wink stay tuned for the game type thing. But so far what they've shown, I'm happy with how it looks. More space for the characters, looks nice and high resolution. I don't even know what they're doing about the music. Like, I feel like they might redo that or maybe get different arrangements. It's too early to say, I guess.
Danganronpa 2, an early recipient of the Rare RPG site, 10 out of 10. So we'll see if 2x2 can live up to that. A few other, just kind of like, not a lot of other trailers or showcases for this week, but we did get a few updates from some upcoming games. This one I'll probably just touch on real quickly. Square Enix, of course, is ramping up to the release of Octopath Traveler Zero, and they've released a lot of like newsletters about the features of that game for people that are coming to it new, that only have, you know, passing knowledge about how Champions of the Continent worked. So we got a few new like biographies about some new travelers in the game. We got some confirmation that this was known, that all the original travelers will make an appearance in some fashion. I don't remember though, Adam, I don't know if you remember or Josh, if this artwork of the original eight travelers is new artwork or if it's old artwork. I don't recognize it, and it's just neat to see them again. So either it's new to me or
good question. I feel like it's the original artwork, but I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember. I feel like I've seen these before, but I don't remember. That's just like, because
you recognize the character,
yeah,
in a similar style. Yeah.
The art is different from Octopath Traveler 1, but I don't know if this was in like if this is from Champions of the Continent.
I might have been from Champions of the Continent. Right. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and then they talk about things that we'll be able to go into detail completely next week. So there's no point really teasing it up here. How the path actions work, how the town like amenity levels work, party chat returns. There's a sea gameplay component again. We've already talked about the demo with carryover. If you're interested, up on the site we have all the artwork shown for that, but we'll be back next week to talk about it in full.
I think the interesting part is like they mentioned, hey, we're gonna release the OST for Octopath Traveler Zero this in December for $36 US dollars.
I just remembered I wish I wasn't just in the middle of a move, because I need to pre-order that limited edition that has the exclusive Breaking Boost soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Oh man,
and that's a two disc CD set. But they mentioned it's for newly composed music tracks specifically for Octopath Zero. It's not like carryover tracks from Chance of the Continent. It's like, hey, this is all new from.
There's Yasunori two CDs Mishiki. Worth of new music.
That's what they said. So I'm excited, but obviously they've been selling the original soundtrack for Chance of the Continent, the source material, I guess, for Octopath Zero for years. That has excellent music. So if you want the complete package, you definitely want this one plus the Champions of the Continent as well.
And then we had a couple of news posts over the week, and I'm gonna lean on Mikhail for all the details here about the upcoming. Obviously, of course, early next year we've got the Yakuza 3 Kiwami being released for the first time, plus Dark Ties. But there's a lot of re-releases and upgrade options for Yakuza 0, Yakuza Kiwami, and Yakuza Kiwami 2. So Mikhail, I might just lead it to you, because of course these are getting updated for PS5 and Xbox Series. There's specific news about the Steam versions, about the lack of save transfer. I don't know where we want to tackle this first, about like we have three different news posts, or at least two, about all the details that Sega and RTG have released about these upcoming like re-releases of these remasters.
Yeah, so we'll go game by game. So Yakuza 0 Director's Cut, that launched in, it was a launch title for the Switch 2 in June. It was basically the original game, some new scenes, licensed music added back, and a dogshit online mode no one played. That is getting released on
and a dub.
PC. Yeah, sorry, sorry. I completely forgot about that. A dub, which I didn't use. So, yeah. So Yakuza 0 Director's Cut is releasing, like, after its Switch 2 debut, it's coming to PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X on December 8th. It's going to be a $50 release, completely new. If you own the original, it's going to be a $15 upgrade. And they're doing a physical release for this on Xbox and PS5 in the US. And in Europe, it's going to be on PC and PS5, not Xbox. Yes, it's getting a PC physical, which is probably going to be a code in box. But yeah, now the thing what they're doing with this is, on December 8th, they are delisting the original Yakuza 0 on. They've announced it for Steam, PlayStation 4, Xbox, and the Windows Store. They haven't said anything about GOG, but I assume it's also going to get delisted on GOG. But those who own this, your save does not carry over to this new one, but you can upgrade. If you own it after it's delisted, you can still re-download it. Now, I expected this to happen. In fact, when they stopped discounting Yakuza 0, I even thought they were going to offer an upgrade path, because the same thing happened with Dark Souls Remastered. Namco just stopped discounting Dark Souls Prepare to Die Edition on PC for a while, and then Dark Souls Remastered got announced and people on PC could upgrade to it at half price, and they delisted Prepare to Die Edition. With this, when they announced Yakuza 0 Director's Cut, they didn't make any mention of any upgrade or just anything. So I just thought it was just them being weird about it, and then they have a last minute upgrade which they announced like this past week. So the important thing is, after December 8th, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One owners cannot buy a version of Yakuza 0 digitally, because they only have to buy a disc which is like probably going to be out of print, or they have to like buy it on the new console. You will not be able to get the game on your console digitally anymore. So that's kind of annoying. So, yeah, that's Yakuza 0. Yakuza Kiwami 1, it recently released on Switch 2. It was a discounted upgrade for Switch 1 owners, like a $10 upgrade. And that is coming to PS5 and Xbox Series X with new languages. No new dub, just new languages, subtitle options. The licensed music is coming back. And for PC, this is going to be this is just going to be an update. They just said the languages will be added as an update. They haven't mentioned the licensed music, but I assume it's happening. What I don't know is whether like they got the same team that did the PC port to update this, or whether it's going to be a new port again, because Yakuza Kiwami 1 and Kiwami 2 and 0 were like the early ports they did to PC. So like while 0 and Kiwami 1 run fine, they still lack some of the modern PC features. So I don't know whether this is going to be a new port or not. For people who own Kiwami 1 on PlayStation 4 or Xbox, you can upgrade to the new native PS5 and Series X version for $2, I believe. Again, no save transfer. I cannot remember if they mentioned if they are delisting Kiwami 1 yet. I don't think they've mentioned it, but maybe I've forgotten it. But yeah, like people who have Kiwami 1 can upgrade. The other thing I've forgotten to say so far is, for people who own the game through any subscription service like Game Pass or PS Plus, you don't get the upgrade. And if you own the physical copies, you don't get the upgrade. So the upgrade is purely for digital owners who've paid for the game. So yeah, a lot of caveats over here. Kiwami 2 is the confusing one, because this gets a free upgrade. So if you own the PS4 or Xbox One version digitally, you can upgrade for free. Again, no save transfer. They hadn't actually mentioned what this upgrade brings in, but a post which, like from the Sega Japanese FAQ page, which my friend found and linked me to, and I verified with Kite that visit page. They say that the only difference between the PS5 Series X and Switch 2 versions are, the Switch 2 version is 30 FPS, while these are 60. this is notable for a few reasons, because one, why is Sega not promoting this? And two, because Yakuza Kiwami 2 is notorious for having like some animations and physics busted above 30 FPS, even on PC. Like, this was the first Dragon Engine port for PC where some combos are harder to, like, you can't, like, get the combo string input correctly if you're playing above 30 FPS. Some mini games don't run correctly above 30 FPS as well. So, I don't know what's going to happen with that if it's 60 FPS and whether the PC version gets fixed. Another thing to note is with Kiwami 2, the Switch 2 version, which I reviewed recently, they have cutscenes also at 60 FPS. And the problem with this is the cutscenes were originally at 30, so the 60 FPS ones have some issues. They realized this and they added a 30 FPS cap on PC for cutscenes if you want as a toggle. That's not there on Switch 2. No idea how this is going to get handled on PS5 and Series X. I'm going to try my best to cover this, but I don't have access to the new versions yet. And I'm currently playing 100 lines, so we'll have to see how that goes. But there you go. That essentially covers what's happening with Zero, Kiwami 2, and Kiwami 1. Some of them have a paid upgrade, some of them have a free upgrade. We have no clarity on the PC port situation, what's getting updated, what's getting patched, how this will affect mods, stuff like that. But the one thing I want to, like, at least from my point of view, what I think is there are some people concerned about the save transfer thing, saying that when they update it on PC, will my Kiwami 1 and 2 saves not work? I believe the save, like the save thing they've mentioned about it not carrying over, is specifically for the console version. I've never heard of a PC version not being able to read your save after a patch. Like, if it's a different version, I understand. Yeah, like that happens sometimes with early access. So, like, you know, sometimes in a review guide it says your save might not work, but it should work and stuff. You have those like disclaimers, but I don't think there'll be any problem with Kiwami 1 and 2 save. But if you're a little concerned, I would recommend backing up your saves. Like, it's pretty easy to like get the save folder. PC Gaming Wiki will have the location. Just back up your saves in case there's any problem. And I'm almost certain that when Yakuza 0 Director's Cut launches on PC, someone will create a tool to bring your 0 save over. Like, it's not going to be difficult to do that. There have been people who've like brought over their Steam save to like Xbox Game Pass versions and stuff like that for Yakuza games. I don't think there'll be a problem with this. Just back up your saves to be safe. So that should cover it. And I kind of want this. Like, I remember when they released it on Switch 2, I was like, I'm glad they didn't do all platforms together, because I'd have died that week with how many embargoes were there. But like, now it's like, just why are you doing it now, first week of December? Like, just wait for us to finish our Game of the Year stuff, please.
It's also just a mess. And like, the way that they messaged it, and then some cases the lack of messaging, and the way that like, it's not consistent. And it just, massive props to you for able to chronicle it, because it's a massive shit show, it seems like.
There's one more thing I'm concerned about recently, is because they've stopped discounting Yakuza 3 Remastered when they do their sales. So are they going to delist that when Kiwami 3 comes out? Because, like, that's a remake. So, like, but them not discounting this, like, obviously they're not going to give an upgrade, because that's up for pre-order for 16. Yeah. But, like, why have they stopped discounting Yakuza 3 Remastered? Are they going to, like...
That's a good point, yeah.
Are they doing it because they want people to buy... Yeah, are they doing it because they don't want people to, like, buy the old version on discount and buy the new version? Or are they going to delist it? Because, like, as much as I joke about how Yakuza 3, like, Kiryu takes 5 years to, like, pick up a shiny from the ground with the slow animation or whatever, I don't want that version delisted. Regardless of how Kiwami 3 turns out, like, the whole point of them remastering that was to, like, preserve it so that everyone can play it on modern platforms. Yeah. So, I don't know, like, I'm just... RGG Studios just confusing me, like, with what they're doing recently. And I say that as someone who actually enjoyed Pirate Yakuza and Hawaii a lot, so...
It's really annoying what they've been doing lately, man. Hope things improve for them, but right now they just a lot of the stuff they're doing, just I just shake my head and be like, come on, you guys are better than this. But we'll see how that shakes out. But I assume a lot of people already have Yakuza 0 on Steam. It's been on this deep discount for many years now. Hopefully, people, you know, get that if they want the original version, get it before the director's cut.
Oh, you know, you just brought up something else interesting, so which I completely forgot about before. So, Yakuza 0 launched on PC for $20. Like, that was like, you know, they did their first PC port. It was cheap. It sold a lot. Yeah. Everyone was happy. It was like a fantastic game to start with.
It was like the greatest pricing.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Yeah, yeah, and the funny thing is, despite what I've seen, like some promotion from Sega, like sponsored stuff, where they've been telling people, like YouTubers and all, like, oh, you can start with Kiwami 1. And I was just thinking that if I started with Kiwami 1, I probably wouldn't have played the rest of the series. Like, Zero is the best starting point, but that's another conversation. But so the $20 thing has a $15 upgrade. Now, you'd think, like, you know, okay, they're charging almost as much as we paid back then for an upgrade for a version which has features no one cares about or whatever. The one thing which a lot of people aren't realizing is Yakuza 0 actually had fantastic regional pricing when it launched back in 2018 on PC. And Sega has like been awful with regional pricing in many regions since then. So it's actually going to cost more to upgrade to Director's Cut than it did to buy Yakuza 0 at full price back in 2018 for many countries. Like, that's going to happen. Like, for sure. It's pretty sad and funny.
What a mess.
Yeah.
Yakuza Zero is like the one game that I pretty much unequivocally say start with the prequel. It feels like every other series, like, you have to play the original before the prequel because release order it's how the developers made the game and it's how like most people should experience it. But I kind of agree, like, between Zero and Kiwami, it's like, Zero is probably going to be a better starting point.
Yeah, for modern Yakuza series lines, like, definitely start with Zero. But hey, if you have easy access to a PS2 and a copy of the original Yakuza, not the Kiwami version,
yeah, there you go.
Then
yeah.
I honestly just if those caveats aside, like, hey, if you actually have easy access to that and are willing to do that, I always do recommend, hey, go start with the original Yakuza, because it's kind of like the purest form of, like, this was like their original vision before things piled up over time. Obviously, Zero's an excellent game. Love it. But there's something quaint and interesting about, like, that original Yakuza 1 game and Yakuza 2, which I really, really, really love the original version of Yakuza 2. It'd be one of my favorite games.
I need to play those eventually. Like, maybe I should just eventually wait for someone to bring that translation into the PS3 version and, like, play it patched on...
I don't know how those versions are like, but
I haven't played these though. Like, I've played all the I've played Zero, Kiwami 1 and 2 like so many times. I've just never played the original, so maybe I should do that at some point. This is another case where, like, you know how GOG brought back Resident Evil like 1 and 2 and 3, like, they brought the, like, this is something which I would hope they'd bring, but, like, these ports don't exist, so yeah, I don't see Sega doing it, but yeah, it would be good to have, like, have the original and have the remakes together.
It just feels like Sega and RPG Studio just don't care for, like, those initiatives whatsoever as well. Like, they've pretty much ostensibly forgotten that those original versions exist.
Yeah. We have a few other headlines here for some collabs. I guess FF9 is getting collabed into another Eden. And Attack on Titan is going to get a collab into Assassin's Creed Shadows.
So, I think Adam's.
I have no opinion on these, but they're there.
Yeah, I mean, the another Eden collabs are always interesting because, like, yes, it's a gacha mobile game. It does have a Steam release, but the how another Eden's collab characters work is that they have their own, like, separate side story where you could actually obtain all these characters for free. On them, there's no gacha element to them. So and a lot of, like, starting, like, if people are, like, playing another Eden for the first time, like, oddly enough, one of, like, the strongest starting characters when they last checked in on it was Joker from Persona 5. People always recommended, hey, like, do this collab, like, early to get Joker because he'll carry you for, like, a good chunk of it. And, like, those are always fun the way that another Eden does it, because those, as far as, aside from Chrono Cross, which lasts several years, like, their collabs are permanent. So, like, there's no, like, time gate or time restriction. Once they're available, and as far as I know, they're permanent. Like a lot of the content updates in that game, I don't believe there's, like, a single content update in that game that's been, like, it's permanently, like, time locked or whatever. So it's always a fascinating thing that they continue to build upon it. It's way too much over my head these days. I don't have any intent to return to it, but it's a cool game.
It's also like some of the screenshots for this Final Fantasy IX collab, like some of the menus is styled in the Final Fantasy IX like aesthetics and versions, like, you know, the gray textured background with the stats and stuff. So that's a fun touch. So that's cool that they're doing it. It's not the Final Fantasy IX remake that people are wanting, but at this point, you know, people will take what they can get, especially with new art, obviously. And then with the other side of the equation, with the Assassin's Creed Shadows and Attack on Titan stuff, it's stupid. Like, it's obviously, like, people have been sharing out around the image of, like, the Titan smile from the trailer of this collab, which haunts people. And it's also dumb that, like, they're adding microtransactions if you want to dress up Naoe and Yasuke with costumes from the show. You want to spend on it, sure, why not?
Hey, at least it's not the four-legged choco horse or whatever that was for Origins.
Oh yeah, that was something. But yeah, I mean, sure, why not? I mean, it's dumb, but it's meant to be dumb.
There's also 2B is in Ever Crisis now, I guess, or you can That's dress true. Yuffie and Tifa.
Yeah, 2B is like it's like a boss
outfits.
Yeah, so you're not getting a playable 2B, but you can fight 2B as a boss, and then, like you said, Yuffie and Tifa will get 2B outfits. For people still sticking with that game, hey, you get to dress up Tifa as 2B now. Your loyalty to that game has been rewarded. There you go.
I don't know, that fit works on Yuffie pretty well. She looks like she could be like a generic character from any like Kingdom Hearts or any anime.
Yeah, don't give them ideas for Kingdom Hearts 4.
There you go. Just a couple final little headlines here. Cyberpunk 2077 has hit the insane milestone of 35 million sold copies. And it hit that milestone quicker than Witcher 3 did. So just huge success and turnaround for CD Projekt and with Cyberpunk, because it did not come out of the gate strong at all, and that's understating it. So they've turned it around. I know people have different opinions on this, like whether they've duped people or whether they actually delivered on what they marketed. Of course, they got the well-received Switch 2 port. Phantom Liberty a couple of years back was pretty well received. The original release had a lot of context around it, but 35 million and ostensibly working on some sort of follow-up at the studio.
Yeah. Godspeed to whatever the follow-up to Cyberpunk is. They has tall shoes to fill.
Just a pair of release dates, or one release date, one release window. Warframe is getting its next big content update on December 10th. I bet Scott will be covering that up on the site. This is Warframe, the old piece. And then
this is an interesting one because from what I understand with this update, like their Digital Extremes is basically giving people the option, like newcomers, the option to skip a lot of like the Warframe content to get to some of the later stuff in it, which always causes a divide, like, you know, like the FF14 stuff, like the basically the past too. Skip all the story stuff and do all the newest content. So obviously this has caused a divide, from what I understand, the Warframe community of like, hey, you're giving the people the option to skip, you know, large chunks of the story. Always a tricky thing.
And then the Switch edition of Caves of Quid is delayed to January 2026. I know Adam has been like some of these ports and other things that's still say like on the websites 2025, and you're like, you sure about that? It's like, yeah, this is one of those things where we figured that this would be delayed. Switch version of Capes of Quid, I believe it's Quid, is going to be in January of next year.
QUD is a fun word.
Yeah. Obviously, like I said, next week we're going to be talking about Octopath Traveler Zero, and it'll be our last regular episode of the podcast. So we'll get final thought. Well, not final thoughts, but final regular thoughts before we have to contextualize it into Game of the Year the following week. So maybe Mikhail will have Kingdom Come done by then. Maybe I'll boot up Elden Ring Nightreign. I don't know. I have it, but I've never played it. All sorts of things. We're not going to get to everything.
Honestly, I also haven't played Nightbrain yet, and I've been looking for an excuse, so.
But it also has that card, like, does it qualify? Question mark?
Yeah, that's a good... We'll have these discussions in I would say, whatever the opposite of in brief is, in full, in just a couple of weeks. But yeah, look forward to that. All of the reviews that I kind of mentioned, no new ones this week, but all the ones from October and November with the big deluge of games that we've survived over the last couple of months are all up on the site at rpgsite.net. Join the Discord, discord.gg/rpgsite. Follow RPG Site on all the social media networks. Just search for RPG Space Site. You should be able to find us. If you like this podcast, whatever podcast service you listen to it through, leave us a like, leave us a rating. We'd love to see those. And we'll be back next week with our final regular 2025 episode of the TetraCast. Until you hear from us next time, stay safe, take care, and we'll talk to you then.
Gonna have Christmas dinner with Chow, and I'm gonna serve us Memphis soup.
No, please don't.